Legendary singer Johnny Mathis celebrates his 62nd year as a recording artist by sharing his greatest hits and personal favorites at the Hanover Theater, 2 Southbridge Street, Worcester, this coming June 16th. I had the great pleasure of speaking with Johnny a few weeks back.
Hey, Troy.
Let's start this conversation by getting his name correct. It's actually John Royce Mathis. John, how you doing?
I'm okay, thank you very much. I'm an old guy now. I remember when I was young and running around in your part of the country, I was starting my career, and I was all by myself, and it turned out pretty good, though.
If I may, I'm going to reach all the way back, and then hopefully we can come right up to modern day with a few questions. Your father was a huge influence. Would you bring him to life for us and share that story of the piano, if you would?
My dad was my best pal. He and my mom had 7 children. We were all very well taken care of, even though they worked for domestic wages. They were always concerned about the people that they were working for and hoping they would stay in business or what have you. But we had a lot of fun, my dad and I. I found out at a very young age that he sang. And he confided in me that he was a piano player too, but we had no piano. And one day, I guess I must have been about 6 or 7 years old, and heard a clamor outside of the house very late at night, and there was a bunch of parts to something lying on the floor outside of our little apartment in San Francisco, and it turned out that my dad brought it all in, all these pieces of wood, and put it together, and it turned out to be a piano. and that took a few hours, I might say, and by that time, my brothers and sisters and I were all awake and found out that my dad was sitting at the piano playing it. And that was the revelation of my of my beginning of my musical career, because after that, my dad and I spent many, many hours around the piano wondering about what I would do in my life, because I loved to sing just like my dad did. And before I knew it, about the age of 12 or 13, we had a voice teacher, and I was on my way to the thing that I would do for the rest of my life.
What was your first experiences of being on stage, and how old were you then?
When I started to sing away from my home, I was about 12 or 13 years old. I sang mostly for ladies, clubs, and sang in church, sang in school, and I was looking for some guidance as far as a voice teacher was concerned, and and that was about 5 years later that happened.
Now, during all this time, you're actually also into athletic sport. A little bit of history there, if you would.
Well, you know, most young people in school do some sorts of athletics. I was a little gung-ho as far as that was concerned, and I excelled at high jumping, which was kind of a different sport for most young people. But I was a high jumper and a hurdler on the track team, and it kind of had a very good effect on me. I got accustomed to physical workouts, and to this day, what am I, 82 years old, and I'm still getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning, going to the gym for an hour or so, exercising. And it's been a godsend for me, really, because of my choice of things that I do to support myself, and that is traveling around the world singing.
Well, you've been quite successful with that, obviously, and even at one point you held a record for one of your athletic endeavors.
Well, I did get a chance to participate in sports in high school and college. I had a chance to go to the Olympic trials as a high jumper, but during the same week, I got a chance to go to New York and make my first recording. That was a kind of a double-edged sword for me. I wasn't quite pleased with the the two situations. But of course, my dad was standing beside me while all of this was going on, and he said, "Well, son, you know, this is what we've been praying for since you were a little kid." So I left my athletics and started my musical career.
Sure. Well, one of my questions was going to be how you found your way to Columbia Studios in 1956.
Well, actually, I was heard by the head of jazz music at Columbia Records at a local nightclub in San Francisco. So he was my mentor, and he was the one that I was going to begin my career with. He was, as I mentioned, the head of jazz music. He thought that perhaps I would be the next jazz singer of note. That was kind of what we had in mind, but after recording of the first jazz record that I made, everybody decided that I was probably better off singing ballads. And next thing I know, I was working with Mitch Miller, who was in charge of popular music at Columbia Records, and had a couple of successes with songs. I think the first one was called Wonderful, Wonderful, and then It's Not For Me to Say, and Chances Are, Twelfth of Never, and Misty, and so on and so forth. And and it was all laid out in front of me, and so far that has been my legacy over the years as far as my music is concerned.
So was Mitch influential in your development of your unique music style, the way you approach the vocals? And
actually, my musical style had been long kind of formed before I got to Columbia Records. Actually, I had a series of wonderful arrangers. Percy Faith comes to mind, several other people who did guide me in the art of making popular recordings. I had never recorded really before, so I was to hear my voice played back. That was a revelation to me, and I said, "Oh no! I shouldn't have done that. I should have done this. I should have done that." And that was the beginning of learning how to make a record, and it was quite a daunting exposure for me. I knew nothing about that aspect of singing, and that was enlightening and also very rewarding as far as my musical career was concerned.
Now, I'm sure this is going to be a challenging question for you, but who is your favorite orchestrator?
Aha! That is daunting. all of the ones that I sang with over the years, Nelson Riddle, Percy Faith, Glenn Arthur, Tio Macero, Bob Prince, all of these wonderful people who, you have to remember, I was 18 years old when I started, and so I knew nothing other than, a few songs to sing. Mm-hmm. And the rest of it was all according to just the good nature of these people that I was around in the beginning of my life at Columbia Records. And I must say that it's an amazing thing. I don't think it's happened to any other singer that I can think of, but I'm still with Columbia Records after how many years? 60 years?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
I think you're the longest-running artist that they've had. I was thinking it was actually Bob Dylan, but I'm now enlightened to the reality that there's you.
Oh, I was there before Bob Dylan, yeah.
Oh, yes, long before. So with that, how does a relationship develop with your arrangers? I mean, a little bit of insight there, if you might.
Most of the arrangers who I worked with in the beginning had some sort of history with the record company. Mm-hmm. And, of course, once they found out what direction musically I was going in, they hired different orchestrators, the ones that come to mind are the ones that I've mentioned, Percy Faith, mm-hmm. the Glen Arthur, etc. But there was also lots and lots of others who were very important to the success. The one that comes to mind, I can't remember his name right now. He's very popular and became kind of, he had a lot of sing-along kind of performances on record. But anyway, I had a lot of help from a lot of people, and I had no idea which direction I would go. But the few successes that I had in the very beginning with songs that I've mentioned, like Chances Are, The Twelfth of Never, It's Not For Me to Say, mm-hmm. Wonderful, Wonderful, and that sort of was the metamorphosis of my musical career. I kept along that line, and then had a lot of success making albums with songs that I learned from my voice teacher or from my dad. They were all songs that I sort of memorized over the years. So it was a process, but fortunately I had time and I had wonderful opportunities at a very early age, and I got into the habit of really applying myself musically, and haven't really lost that that kind of instinct.
So in this selection of songs, and I'm going to ask this actually for your newest release, Johnny Mathis Sings the Great New American Songbook, you must have just a plethora of songs that you would love to bring to life, and whittling it down to the tracks on this latest work. What kind of challenge is that for you or those working with you?
Over the years, most of my recordings were many of them, of course, were songs that were written years and years ago, but the record company also wanted me to sing a lot of the current songs that were being played on the radio, and I had a lot of success singing those songs after they were made famous by other singers. Mm-hmm. And that still holds true to today. It's a little bit more difficult now for me to find songs. I don't know why, but popular music is all about change. If you wait 10, 15 years, it's a little bit different approach, right, as far as the listening public is concerned. And I've lived with that over the years, and I still have the challenge of finding songs that suit my my personality or suit my vocal range to this day. And the latest ones that I've recorded are kind of in that vein. Mm-hmm. I find the ones that I think vocally and musically that make sense, and try to record them in a way that that's more or less conducive to what I sound like. And it's always a challenge, but there's always something to be sung in the popular music of today.
Your interpretation of Hallelujah, Leonard Cohen's composition, it's just chilling. To even ask you how you feel when you're singing Hallelujah.
Yeah, innocence has a lot to do with it. Most of the music that I have is a challenge because, of course, it's sung by someone else. It's written by someone else. There must be a million ways that they want it interpreted, and I only have one, and that's the way that I sing. And so it's always pleasant and always a wonderful feeling when a successful meeting of my voice and a song that I found, which I think suits me. And over the years, that is the thing that has buoyed my career I've found enough songs that are pleasing to the public, and I've had success with enough of them to get me through the decades. I started singing when I was recording, as a matter of fact, when I was 18 years old, and now I'm 82, and still looking for songs to sing, and I haven't really gotten tired of it yet, and I hope I never do.
Well, we hope that we find Hallelujah and your interpretation of Pharrell Williams' Happy as part of your performance here in Worcester at the Hanover Theater. They're just gorgeous songs. This new album is really just simply wonderful. I'm going to date myself as well, but I was born the year that you came out with your first album.
Really? My goodness gracious. You don't sound like it. You sound like a young man.
Well, it's just such a pleasure to have some time here with you. If I may, I do have a couple other questions just about real life and being a performer, et cetera. Would you share with us your first real experience of being a person of color and performing?
Well, you know, I was raised in San Francisco. I was born in Texas. My dad took the family to San Francisco when I was about 4 or 5 years old. So that's the element of communication that I had from my beginnings in San Francisco, a cosmopolitan place, a place where people from all over the world congregated. I got an opportunity from the time I was a little boy to meeting people from other cultures, other parts of the world. And I was a kid learning Spanish songs, German songs, French songs at an early age, and that was my surroundings. So I was very, very wide-eyed and bushy-tailed when I went out and left San Francisco, and found that. Unfortunately, the rest of the world hadn't caught up to my upbringing in San Francisco, and I got a few surprises when I started to travel to different parts of the country that weren't so lenient with young people of color. It was difficult.
If I may, it's been said that Nancy Reagan was a major influence in your life, and would you share that story with us?
I made friends with a wonderful lady who had taken over her husband's old life on the racetrack, and she was the president of one of the local racetracks. And she and I somehow met, I think it was through Merv Griffin, who was a pal of mine from San Francisco early days when I was growing up in that area. And Merv introduced me to this lady, and we used to have dinner parties at her house. And one of the guests was always Nancy Reagan. She brought along her husband once in a while, the president. But mostly Nancy and I shared a lot of musical evenings at these dinner parties, and we became pals. And I had sung for her at the White House on several occasions, and we had a lot of fun together singing songs that she knew. I usually introduce her to other songs. So that was how that came about. And it was one of the great experiences of my life to share some of the experiences that she had in the White House.
Well, you know, Johnny Mathis, or John Mathis, it's a pleasure to have these moments with you, and very much looking forward to your performance at the Hanover Theater. And we still here at WCW take requests, and your songs come up frequently as requests, and it'll be great to see you live in person.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. You know, that was the first place that I started to wander is that area of the country. When I was a little kid and I had time off, I was about 18, 19 years old, and I was, after I had done my chores in the recording studio, I used to wander around the neighborhood, and that took me up to New England on many occasions, so mm-hmm. I'm very familiar with that part of the country. I love it very much. It has lots of meaning to me, and I'm looking forward to coming back there very soon.
Well, once again, thank you, sir, and we wish you the best.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.